Accession number 28698. Reel 19.
At the end of the working day, what happened after that to the platoon and yourself?
Again, it depends on what stage of training you were on. If you weren't on any night exercise or night firing, the young recruits would go for their evening meal, and then they would either sit and relax, or they would write notes on what they'd learnt that day, or they would talk to each other to see if somebody had been stronger than the others. The stronger ones hopefully would look after the weaker ones. The permanent staff, some of them lived in because they were single corporals, they would go to their bunks where they lived, or if you were a senior rank and you lived in the sans mess, you'd go back to the sans mess where you'd have your evening meal and use the bar in the sans mess. If you're a married man, of course, you would go home to your wife and family.
Had the amount of cleaning and bull lessened over the period of time? I'm thinking, you know, where most evenings they would spend time and hours cleaning, bullying, blankoing and so forth. Had that changed at any degree?
Yes, it had. I remember my days as a recruit where we spent most of our night bullying the floors up to the highest possible standard and cleaning brasses to the highest possible standard. We're now down to the hygiene only, really. If everything was clean and tidy, a lot of what most people would call bullshit had literally gone. It was straightforward cleanliness and hygiene.
So that element would not take up too much of the evening. So what did recruits get up to in an evening? Approximately, as a sergeant, you wouldn't know if you weren't in the billet.
Well, drinking wasn't encouraged, although if you're over 18, of course, you could go to the naffy and drink, because again, for the first few weeks, you were not allowed out of barracks. After your 6 weeks and you'd done your passing off the square part, of course you could go downtown if you weren't required to prepare anything that night for what you were going to do the next day.
So basically that was their time?
It was their time,
and,
yes.
And you've described it.
And the corporals would pop in maybe for a few minutes just to see if they were all right. They had no welfare problems, or, you know, they weren't missing home, of course, if it was the start of their recruit training. Later in life, once they got used and they'd all been comrades now, and they would stand to really look after each other, you'd still call in just to make sure that, again, there was no bullying going on, that everybody was happy, that nobody had any problems. Or you'd come in just to show them that you were there for them to come and talk to. Remember, by this stage, you are their mother, their father, their uncle and their brother.
Was there any gambling that went on in the evenings?
No, apart from the odd kids playing cards for entertainment, there was no large-scale gambling going on at all.
Was the army used to frown on gambling?
Yes, it does, because you start losing your money, you start losing friends, you start losing morale, and the army do not encourage any of that.
What kind of welfare problems, and you know, in general, the ones that kept popping up most of the time, what kind of welfare problems might you be faced with?
Depending on what background you're from, it was loneliness, missing mum and dad. Of course, we had WRVS ladies who used to have officers over the naffy, and the soldiers, of course, could go and have a one-to-one welfare briefing with these ladies, and they were absolutely brilliant. So you could pour your heart out, and again, they were your mum, they were your grandma. You could tell them all your problems in confidence, unless it needed to be passed on to the platoon sergeant or the platoon commander to sort it out as a military problem. But a lot of it was just loneliness, or help me write home to my mum and dad, or I can't put something into words. We looked after them.
The army's always evolving, isn't it? In this sense, I mean, once upon a time you wouldn't get that kind of backup support for a soldier.
Well, Montgomery one time said, "Be careful with your balance of operational training and welfare, and never let welfare be the upper hand." Of course, even in this stage, we were starting where welfare was most important, where we were looking after the soldier a lot better. He had thoughts he needed, especially in his young informative days, he needed to get things off his chest. and we had to be there to listen to this.
Had the number of people in a room changed at all? Were there smaller rooms now that the recruits were in?
No, in training it was still the 10-man and 20-man rooms. It was still character building, team building, and you needed them in there. And again, for the reason, when I was in training, so the platoon sergeant or the platoon commander could come in on night time and see all the soldiers in one place at the same time. It made life and communications to talk to them that much easier.
What platoon did you have?
I'm your platoon. There's a strange thing you said that. I only did the first term as a platoon sergeant, and then I was promoted to colour sergeant, and I had to leave that platoon just before they were due to pass out. So having trained them from the day they joined to almost the day they were passing out to go to their battalions, I got promoted a couple of weeks early, and went to the other side of the camp, to the junior soldier side, as their company quartermaster sergeant.
How long was the course that a platoon would go through?
It was 3 or 4 months in total, from the basic training right through to the time they would do their battle camp down in Sennybridge, to come back, to pull all their kit up, to do their parade and all the drill they needed for that passing out parade in front of their parents and whichever general was going to take the salute to passing out. So it was about 3 to 4 months.
And you would have a platoon officer. Did you remember his name?
Mine was a green jacket officer, actually. He was a guy called Vivian Robinson. Well, he was about 6 foot 6 and I was 5 foot 6, but we got on well.
And what rank would he hold?
Just lieutenants. They're all lieutenants in training. But you had the battalion complement of having adjutants, company commanders, and a commanding officer. And the commanding officer was one of our own from 2LI, Lieutenant Colonel John Kendall.
And were they good, these people?
Oh, yes, they were. I mean, I think anybody who goes to a depot as an instructor and the permanent staff from the commanding officer down over are really hand-picked because they know they will sustain the soldier through training. And again, it was a 2-year posting.
The background of your platoon, where would they come from, these lads?
All over. The mining areas of Durham and Yorkshire, the rural areas of Somerset and Cornwall, the local areas of Shropshire. It was a full mixed bag. Factory workers, some hadn't worked, some had been down the mines shortly for a brief time. Window cleaners, you name it, they'd been something, which was good because they all had a different experience to impart to others.
Can we talk a little bit about the education side of it now, the educational lectures, whatever they were getting. What standard was this?
Again, depending on the background of the soldier, some had come in quite well educated. Some had been to grammar school. Some had been to a good, decent secondary school. Some had even done college. And then, of course, you've got the others who left school with the basics of reading and writing and a bit of arithmetic. But everybody was taken through their Army Education Certificate 1, 2 and 3 to fetch everybody up to at least a standard where you could communicate inside the Army and outside the Army. Remember, we're getting sophisticated now with radio communications and everything else, so you couldn't have just anybody. If they couldn't read and write, then of course they couldn't go on a radio to take messages. So education was very important, and it also did current world affairs, and it also did geography and history to what they required to have some knowledge in civvy street and in the military life.
Was the history of the light infantry instilled into the recruits?
Yes, it was. Not so much to the county regiments, although they were all made aware of where they were all originating from the King's Own Yorkshire Light Infantry, the Durham Light Infantry, the Somerset and Cornwall Light Infantry, the Shropshire Light Infantry. They were now light infantry, but they needed to know who their forebears were. So yes, regimental history was always taught.
And this was the education corps, I think you said. That would
the Army right. Education Corps would take the adult soldiers, but you had civilian schoolies, as we call them, for the junior soldiers. And I was learning more about junior soldiers now that I'd been promoted into being a CQMS because they came on camp, especially the adventure training camps with us, where we went down to Wales and lived under canvas.
And the course of this was sticking basically with this platoon that you had. The course was about 3 months, although you did move on, as you say.
Yeah.
And it would finish with a parade.
A full passing out parade, where hopefully, if you'd successfully trained your soldiers, if you'd started with 30 men in the platoon, you would end with 30 men in the platoon. Although you always got some that didn't make the grade. And we went through a process called back squadding. You didn't want to get rid of this soldier, but he wasn't good enough at that time to go to a regular battalion who was maybe going to go on operations. So you put him into the squad that came behind you to fetch him up on all his weak points. And hopefully and eventually you get that man trained to the correct standard to go to his battalion.
And this would be with the band and all the paraphernalia of a major parade for them.
Oh yes, you had the band and bugles of one of the battalions who would come and take the parade, and you would have some dignitary who would come and take the salute.
And were families invited to this?
Families were always encouraged to attend the passing out parades of their young sons, yes.
So you became a colour sergeant and you moved over to the young soldier. Did this change your duties in any way, your responsibilities?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I was going from a trainer of young soldiers to being their welfare senior NCO. I was now in charge of making sure they had the correct clothing, the correct weapon, the correct food, and administering them in the field. So if they were out on all day on the range just shooting, I'd be the one who would take their food out at lunchtime. And if they're doing night shooting, I'd go back out on the evening to take their evening meal out into the field. And I'd be the one who would exchange their bedding in camp or their sleeping bag if it was damaged out in the field.
And what was needed, was that being fed to you through the people who were looking after the young soldiers, the platoon, the trainers, I should say, the instructors? Was that being fed from them, or did you actually keep check yourself to see that everything was...
No, in camp, platoon sergeant would always come to the colour sergeant and say, say Thursday was where they all got clean sheets and clean pillar slips and everything else. They would fetch theirs over, and they would get two clean sheets and two clean pillar slips every Thursday. I would make sure that their mess tins and all their equipment in the field was always up to speed, or if they damaged it or broken it, they could fetch it to me, and if it wasn't malicious damage, they would get one free exchange. Of course, if they lost anything or maliciously damaged their equipment, they'd have to pay for it.
And presumably you had a storage area for all this?
Yes, stuff. I mean, you have an equipment store, you have a bedding store, and then you have another store for your 24 ration packs and anything else. And of course, we would keep feeding our store off the quartermaster's store.
The major quartermaster's store in the camp itself?
Yes.
In the depot?
He would have the big ration store and the clothing store and the weapon store. There was three CQMSs at the depot. CQMS, like myself, Junior Soldiers Company. There was a CQMS for the training company, where I just come from, and of course there was a CQMS for the headquarter company, who would look after all the permanent staff and the whole of the camp. And it was strange that all three CQMSs in my time were all Geordies.
Remember the names?
Yep. Alan Boshev, a guy from Sunderland, he was, believe it or not, from the King Shropshire Light Infantry, and he was the CQMS for the adult soldiers. Nev Carrick, who was again a Geordie, but he spent all his life in the King's Own Yorkshire Light Infantry, and he was CQMS for Headquarter Company, and of course I was DLI, or had been DLI, and I was now CQMS of the Junior Soldiers Company. But it was strange that we were all Geordies, but we'd all come from different battalions.
What staff did you personally have for, for your responsibilities?
I had one civilian member who was about 60-year-old, and he was absolutely brilliant. And he would do all the bundling up of the sheets and the pillar slips and all the manual work, really.
And sheets and pillowcases, were they sent to laundries to clean that and being used?
Yep. They go to a laundry and...
Was that civilian, the laundry? Yeah.
Yes, it was. It was all civilian, by contract to the army. So you would put your 600 sheets in and they would fetch 600 clean sheets back. And you would always have two lots of everything, so you always had one clean in. So when a soldier came, it was one for one. And when we give to the laundry, again, it was one for one, so...
Wasn't much stealing from, you know, people who lost or damaged their piece of equipment or whatever, did they...
There was always a temptation.
Yeah.
If somebody lost his knife, fork and spoon, that's the way we take somebody else's rather than admit he'd lost them. But it wasn't widespread.
What if someone came to you and said, look, my fork, or sheets or whatever has been stolen. Did you accept that as a reason? Or?
Well, no, it would go back to the platoon corporals and the sergeant to do an investigation. And if it was proved he'd lost it in the field or he left it in the field, then he would just sign a P1954 and buy a new set.
And were the individual pieces marked or numbered in any way for the soldier?
Yep. Every piece of equipment you get, you would put your last four digits of your regimental number on and your name. And if a soldier was found with the wrong combat jacket or the wrong denim trousers or the wrong piece of equipment, not with his name on, of course he was given the benefit of the doubt of why he was carrying somebody else's equipment or wearing somebody else's equipment. And if it was proved to be theft, of course he would go in front of the company commander and be charged with theft.
Did you have a lot of paperwork attached to your job?
It was the first job I was getting as a CQMS, because really you are a storekeeper, in a sense, both in barracks and then out in the field. Everything was done on army forms and always in triplicate. So, yes, it was a lot of paper, but it was all the learning process. I was learning to be a CQMS junior in a training depot, which would see me in good stead for an operational role in barracks and an operational role in the field. So I learnt my trade well because I was doing it in a peacetime environment.
Did young soldiers present different problems to the adult ones? In the sense that adult people coming into the army and young soldiers coming in?
Junior soldiers were different. One, they're all underage for drinking, so they weren't allowed to go to the naffy drinking. They weren't allowed to use the same ablutions as adults because they were still classed as children. And they had to be kept separate from adult soldiers for a variety of reasons, so there could be no temptation of bullying or anything else. So, yeah, they had their own inherent problems because they were children.
And I think we've actually touched on the type of training they were doing, which was basically adventure training.
They did everything that the adult soldiers did, but they did an awful lot of time on education and adventure training.
So they themselves at the same time would still do weapon training, were they?
Oh, yes.
As the
and that was the beauty of it. If they'd come in at 16, by the time they were 18 and could go to adult training, which was obviously reduced because they'd already learned everything, they had been trained on everything, and possibly, because they'd been there a couple of years, to a much higher standard.
And what was the process of moving them when they got to the age of 18 to an adult?
Well, they'd do their normal terms, irrespective of what it was, 2 terms or 4 terms, as progressive education and military training, and then they would pass out of junior soldiers, and some of them could pass out straight into their battalions. Some of them then came, depending on what standard they were, to for the last 3 or 4 weeks of a training company of adult soldiers and pass out with them if they were at the correct standard, and then they would go to their battalions.
And was passing out for them a similar ceremonial type of...
Every passing out was the same. It would be well planned, well orchestrated, with parents invited, band and bugles, and a dignitary to do the speech.
Was there... or did you... have temporary ranks, like, you know, local acting lance corporal amongst the platoon and the young soldier?
In the juniors did, yeah. You had junior lance corporal, junior sergeant, and a junior sergeant major. And if there was any really shining stars, you would have a junior RSM. And he would take the parade as an adult RSM.
And with the adults again in your own platoon, for example, when you took it over at the beginning, did again was someone highlighted to take over a temporary command in the platoon from the recruits themselves?
Not so much. Now and then you'd have a brassard with a tape on, and if there was any shining stars, you'd make him a temporary lance corporal for a particular part of the day or for that whole day, or in the field so he could take a section attack or do a particular drill. Yes, you give them temporary rank just for the day or for a particular exercise just to try him out to see if he did have what was required to be an NCO.
That would be a use when you went to a battalion, because you'd have someone with at least a certain amount of experience of taking charge.
Leadership skills will either come out naturally or through hard training. Somebody will always come out as a possible born leader. And that would be recognised by the corporal, who'd tell the sergeant, or the sergeant would notice, or the platoon commander would notice it. And you say, right, give that guy your tape for the day, put him in charge of part of the drill, or put him in charge of one of the tactical situations, and see how he operates when he is given the orders to the people who he's been in training with for so many weeks. And it does work.
On passing out, did they all go? Obviously, they went to a light infantry battalion, but they all go as infantrymen, or were some being earmarked for communications and what have you?
They would all go as trained recruits to the battalion. But remember, you'd been writing reports on them from the day they joined the army. And if you said, shows leadership skill, shows weapon training skills, shows communication skills during his radio training, then the battalion could assess them in the battalions and say, I understand you were good at on your signals training, you go in the signals platoon. But it was always best, really, if they went straight into a rifle company to learn the trade.
Now, you had your family with you. They came over from Germany, didn't you?
Yes, and my family with us, and the boys were only then 6 and 7 year old, so they were just starting junior school in Shrewsbury.
And was that the local primary school?
Yeah, the local primary school.
Army?
No, local primary, and they went straight into the local education authority.
We are finding now that soldiers' children are always changing, and you're moving here, there, so they're in and out of this school, in and out of that school, and so on. Did you find that this was a concern, that there was nothing established in that sense?
Yes, it was. At the primary age, you're not too bothered, because one, you're thinking of your own career, but two, and you want your family with you. It's only when it gets to the 14, 15, 16-year-old, when you think they're missing out on their GCSEs and everything else by changing every 2 years.
The schools differ, and obviously some are better than others.
And they change, and they change their curriculum as well, which again we found out with my boys later in life. But you've also got the opportunity to send your children to boarding school as well, at a reduced rate, where the system helps you pay for their boarding school allowance.
So you can do that as other ranks, I might say.
Yes, you can. I mean, everybody thought it was an officer thing, and only officers could do it. But it wasn't really. It was open to all ranks. But there again, you had to have a certain amount of money yourself to pay your part of the boarding school allowance. So really, that's why it was people took it as officers or senior ranks, because they were the only ones who could afford their portion of the fees as well.
Did you seriously consider this for your own boys?
Not in them days, no.
So what were the quarters like for the family in Shrewsbury area?
They were good. They were quite big. Having been in a flat in Gibraltar, it was quite spacious. It was still, there was no double glazing as of yet. I'm not sure if there was in Civvy Street. And Shrewsbury was really cold in the winter, although we witnessed a really cold winter. But no, the houses were clean and comfortable and well decorated.
And quite comfortable, as you say.
Comfortable. Straightforward, painted walls, still no wallpaper or anything, or fitted carpets, but they were comfortable.
And presumably the same routine that happened in all medic quarters, you had the same routine of...
You got marched in, you inspected all your equipment, if there was any marks or damages to do anything, you marked it down. When you marched out 2 hours, 2 hours, two years later, it was expected to be in the same pristine condition. If there was any damage or any marks on the furniture, then you paid for it. I was lucky, I never paid a penny throughout my army life.
And your wife, did she again make use of the NAFI facilities and the army facilities for the usual shopping? Because presumably the town would be nearby. Yeah?
The town was just a mile down the road, and once you were in a UK base, you really were part of the local community. Although there was a NAFI on camp for the wives to shop in, but of course you weren't going to use a NAFI for your big shops when you've got the supermarkets and everything just downtown.
How did the civilians take to a big army base in their midst?
Well, that army base had been the original King Shropshire Light Infantry depot for years and years and years. They were used to waking up as well at 6:30 in the morning to the bugler. We were a great part of their community, and especially in the pubs and the clubs and the shops, because they were getting 300, 400, 500, 600 wages a year being spent in their local shops. We were part of their commercial enterprises.
Were there any problems with young, fit, highly trained young men going out into the locality and the pubs and so forth? Were there any difficulties?
No more than what there was when I was a young recruit. Of course, you were all fighting for the same amount of girls in the same part of town, and the civilian male population resented it in part. But of course, at the same time, you'd have soldiers who would play for the local football teams. So if you were part of the community, you got on with the community. If you went to the dances and ended up with their girls, there was some resentment, but not a great deal.